This is Stephen Clift. You're about to listen to a speech recorded in the fall of 2008 in front of the Future of Democracy Forum hosted by the Council of Europe. It was a great opportunity to share e-democracy and e-participation trends with delegates from over 47 countries. If you enjoyed this speech or are interested in more background on e-democracy and related topics, take a look at stephenclift.com. That's S-T-E-V-E-N. Clift, CLIFT.com, and you'll find my articles going back to 1993 on the topic. So enjoy. Thank you.
In the middle. So I've been around a while in this space. Well, I started this citizen project called edemocracy.org. I also worked in state government. So I was government by day and citizen by night. And it just so happens this conference has reflected a lot of that. You have the grassroots citizen side of activities, the NGOs. You have the government representative democracy sides. And so I have sort of this dual perspective. Well, you know, I've had a lot of dreams, and I've dreamed a lot about how these tools can be used to not just have a say, but actually solve problems in communities and to make democracies vastly more engaging. But then I had a baby, or my wife had a baby. And I have a son as well. It's my daughter. And now I'm much more normal. I experience what most people experience, which is a humongous time crush. In fact, what I've discovered is that what we need with these tools is to make it possible for people to participate from anywhere at any time in a personalized manner. And most sort of traditional political participation is based on the ability to get to a meeting or to get to a place at a certain time, particularly local politics. And in our modern lives, we just don't have the time, or we might not have transportation, or we might not have the interest to be as engaged as was required in years past. Not to that we're going to replace the town hall meeting or opportunities to be engaged in person, because nothing beats the power of looking someone in the eye or shaking their hands. But ultimately, if democracy isn't available to people on their own terms, it won't exist in the long term. After almost 15 years involved in the e-democracy space, I would conclude that representative democracy is not adapting. We have the early adopters here and the experimenters here, but this is the 5% crowd. It's the 95% of folks and the people who live in those jurisdictions or those countries or those states or those cities that we need to think a lot more about and how to bring them along. And in my comments here, I want to seed in a few comments from the different sessions. But I'm kind of mixing together some fresh material as well. One of the other problems, other than just democracy not quite catching up, representative democracy not catching up, is that what we mostly see online, you hear a lot about Facebook and MySpace, all these social networks. What you're really doing, in for the most case, is publicizing private life. And there's a big difference between publicizing private life and having public life exist online, particularly public life among people who live near one another. You also have, particularly on online newspapers and other types of sites, or blog comments, a very anonymous form of political engagement, often sort of bringing out the worst in us. In fact, I think in many ways, what e-democracy needs to do is counter a lot of the negative things that are happening with the internet and politics. We talked about e-campaigning. There was a summary of that earlier. Essentially, that's about organizing people to gain power, to gain money, to gain influence, and it's often in conflict with other elements in society. In the United States, there's two things that we're good at with the internet and politics. We're good at making noise, that's online advocacy, and raising money, that's online campaigning. We actually have a lot to learn from Europe in terms of all the e-consultation, e-participation work, because we have not had a much interest or a focus between elections. But ultimately, if we use these tools to politically arm ourselves and basically use these tools to, you know, basically fight with one another for influence and power, or people are simply mostly anonymous, hiding behind that cloak of non-identity, most people will view the internet as a negative thing in politics. And for those of us who come from who want to build democratic engagement, we need to create alternatives to the default. It isn't good enough to say the internet's going to be a democratizing medium. We actually have to begin making the argument that there are things that are going to happen online that we must counter with better democratic intent. So the challenge, in my opinion, is to build real public life online. And I wrote an article called Sidewalks for Democracy Online. I had a few copies I set out, and I'll give you a link where you can find that article as well. And so I'm going to share a few themes from there and then sew in a couple of the comments that I've heard today, over the last 2 days. I basically start off with the premise that e-government is actually deleting democracy. When you go to a town hall, there's often a sidewalk in front where people can gather. There is perhaps a rack of newspapers, maybe even a bulletin board. There's a hallway where you're in line and you can talk to your neighbors. When you're on an e-government website, it's a singular experience. You can't go to the person next to you and say, you know, this line is taking too long. We need a new mayor. You know, we need better services. And so essentially the number one interface for citizens with their government now is the web. In terms of numbers, I would guess each day there's probably more people at a city website than actually physically go to the office that day as a citizen. And where are the public spaces? Where are the online consultations? Where are the e-petitions? Where are these aspects of the interactive web in that interface? Now, having worked in e-government, I ran the state government's portal in Minnesota. I realized that the whole idea of e-government is about efficiency, security, transactions, all basically the opposite of democracy, openness, transparency, you know, risks. And so the folks that build e-government, while they need to be our friends, I guess, in many ways our governments need to have democracy people have access to online tools. E-democracy is a subset of e-government, has had a very difficult time. So a lot of the folks I've met here at this conference actually represent the democracy building side of governance. And you need to make sure you have access to the tools that you require to do your job, and not to wait for the e-government team to add those tools for you, because their entire training existence is based on a very different mindset and frame of work. I mentioned blogging and the like. It is true that at the national level in most countries, the blogosphere is democratizing punditry. And it means that, you know, there are 300 people that used to be on television, 24-hour television news, and now there are 3,000 people, A-list bloggers, that are all trying to get on TV news, essentially. When you bring that model down local, it's actually more divisive than sort of the town hall meeting and the face-to-face type activity scaling up. And so I think it's important to realize that just because it may be good at the national level, it may not be the model we want locally. So my article has a couple of statements. It talks about making the internet a democracy network by nature. This is something I did not hear much at this conference, but I've stepped back a little bit, and because democracy is fundamentally based on geography for the most part, we need the internet to be more geographic. And I'm going to get a little bit geeky here, but there are a lot of what they call content management systems. When people produce web pages, there is no standard way that they describe the place that content is associated with. And reality is governments, a lot of what they call place blogs, a lot of media sites, they're actually are generating geographically generated information. But it's not easy to aggregate that information. And why that's important is that if you're a local official and you've heard about these blogs, are you going to pay any attention to the public sphere online if you have no idea whether they are your constituents or not? But if you begin to make the content on the internet more geographically navigatable, you're going to be able to pay attention to your citizens as they are out on that whole Web 2.0 environment. And so thinking more about how we as governments and others invest in the whole of the internet to have geography be a stronger factor, it'll make our democracy building that much easier down the road. If we make it part of the nature of the net versus something we have to add on afterwards. So ultimately, place matters. And most people, when they go online, when they think about going to the world. And we're the ones that need to care about coming home online. Because as we displace our time for going out to public meetings, if most of what people experience online is related to going to the world or just sort of personal private life activities and not public life activities, we're going to have a decline in public life. We also need to think about why there are really no white pages on the internet. So my garage was broken into and my bicycle was stolen. Why should I have to have gone door to door to my neighbors to collect email addresses to be able to send them a note saying, did anyone see anything? Did anyone see anything? And I think we need to think about the infrastructure of the net. Obviously, you don't want your email address out there for everyone. But wouldn't it be nice if there was a site where you could say, let the 25 closest neighbors of mine see my email address if you identify them. It's that whole issue of identity and security. If you can begin to have identity on the internet, perhaps there are ways that we can think about how more naturally people who live near one another can opt in to that kind of communication. So the fact that there's no white pages means that people haven't been thinking about local community when it comes to the infrastructure of the net. So I'm going to quickly highlight a few things that I heard, because a lot of what I heard at this conference was related to number two here. Restore and deepen access to representative democracy and governance. Lawrence Pratchett actually talked on the first panel about making democracy more efficient for citizens. I would say that you want to make democracy more effective for all, both decision makers and citizens. While it can be faster and quicker, ultimately, to me, e-democracy, if you just make it about numbers or speed, but not about making better decisions or coming up with greater trust in different types of outcomes, numbers and speed does not justify resources to invest in e-democracy. You need to have more effective outcomes. I also heard about Kim Vorburg and Anne McIntosh talked about people are finding their own spaces for political discussion. They're going out into the wild, so to speak. And I think it's really important. There's a big tension between governments that are trying to attract people to their websites to interact and say a consultation or the like, and what citizens are doing in sort of the public sphere. And I think it's really important to actually take it a step further and think about how governments, particularly civil servants, see it as part of their job to go to the citizens. So if there's a discussion about some health issue in a community, the health worker should be empowered. If they see incorrect information about a disease, say a flu bug, which is spreading through the town, they should be empowered to correct the record or provide an access to a link to the clinic and the like, and really be able to go out and engage people where they are. In the campaign cycle, I call that going to the digital parade. So a couple of highlights from my top 10 to do. Here's four items. We heard about the rule of law. There's a whole section on regulatory issues. If we're going to look back 5 years from now and say, did this conference lead to something? I'm going to be looking for digital democracy acts. A lot of there are a number of MPs here in national parliaments and a number of local governments that talk about, give us some resources and we'll do this. Well, members of parliament are actually very willing to mandate that local governments do things or agencies do things as long as they don't have to themselves. And so parliaments actually, as our representatives, need to think about what are the most important things about e-democracy that need to be universal. And one simple example, public meeting notices. A lot of governments have what they call open meeting laws. They typically require that meetings be announced in the newspaper or perhaps on a bulletin board, a physical bulletin board outside the office. We should simply change the law to also require that all public meetings be placed notice on the internet. Very simple, you might not say how, but just so that you basically go from maybe 40 to 60% of local governments and national ministries having meeting announcements on their website to making sure that all meetings are announced somewhere online. I did not hear a lot at the conference about information access because it's kind of, you could call it an older issue, but the reality is that timely access to information, where a citizen can go in and say, have you heard of Google News Alerts? If you can go in, you can put your name in there, and anytime you're in the newspaper, you'll get an email, or put in some set of keywords. If citizens can find out about a meeting or a new report or a new plan while they still have time to react to it, that's highly empowering. It doesn't change what's public or private, but it allows people to act on something when it still matters. And that technical feature is actually very, very rare in government. And if I were to look for like a quick fix or a quick investment that's technologically driven but doesn't require you to change laws, create email notification tools that can be personalized. Another issue, someone mentioned My Society, Valerie Friesen. It's a group in the UK. They do what I call scrape and innovate. And what I mean by scrape is they go to the Parliament's website and take the data off, put it into a database, into what they call an XML format, and then they do really cool things with that data. They create the interactive interface to Parliament that Parliament itself doesn't do and may never do and maybe never should do. But because the data is available, third parties can innovate on that data. Well, it's fine that they scrape, but there's a big movement. There's a project called the Open House Project in the United States, led by the Sunlight Foundation, which is also promoting this idea, to have governments put more and more decision-making information available in raw formats so that other websites can take that information, organize it, and add further interactive services. You want every major media site in your country or in your area to be an access point into your public meetings, into your public documents, into your various decision-making processes. So e-democracy is everywhere, not just on the government site. Finally, a couple more issues here is
money.
If I'm going to look 5 years from now, there are two things I'd be very interested in. One is whether a government has at least one staff person or a staff team whose job it is when they check in the morning to help that government interact with the public online, to basically be the democracy representative online. And, you know, Estonia has a representative, Australia, Queensland, the state has some representatives, and there are a handful of leading states and countries that have realized that you have to have somebody whose job it is to be a point person or a point team on this to help ministries and others move into this process, or to also think about civil society investments. You know, how do you foster groups like MySociety.org? How do you get the resources? Or Catch-21, we heard from that nonpartisan, impartial youth video project. How does a country begin to ask the question, what is so important about the internet, like television and radio were 50 years ago, that the market itself won't provide for us, but we know we need to invest? And we know it's not always on the government's terms. It will also be that we need to support civil society activities that are more impartial than advocacy efforts that obviously have an incentive already to use these tools for power. A couple other quick concepts. Accountability. Someone in a session mentioned pervasive environmental monitoring. There's a growing trend by governments to put real-time data online, whether that be information about pollution, that they collect from different companies. To the city of, actually, well, it's the District of Columbia, has something like 50 different real-time feeds of data that they're now making available from their various systems. It might be the number of parking tickets that day, police issues. A lot of it is service-related, but it basically is a pulse for how well is this city or this district delivering services to its citizens, and that's about accountability. Whether it's accountability for companies or accountability for governments. I attended the e-inclusion session, and I think that one thing about government initiatives is there's clearly a much greater requirement to an obligation to reach out to the socially excluded. And I think that's really important. At least I'm involved with a group called edemocracy.org. That's my NGO. And we do a lot of volunteer activities. But when we found that when you actually want to launch a community neighborhood forum, in an area which is relatively deprived, you need real resources for that. That goes well beyond the capacity of volunteers, and you need resources, and I think the inclusion stream was really important to have here. And that brings me to sort of my last point here, is that ultimately I'm very interested in how you restore the bounds of community, and that it's about public life, and it's a much broader concept than making government more democratic. It's more about having a democratic and inclusive society, and it's about making sure that there are people out there and organizations that convene, whether that be a government agency that has a mandate and they have a mission and they've decided to convene stakeholders to help government implement that policy. They're taking e-democracy from the input side of government and they're using those same tools on the output side. They're showing that interactivity can be used to help lower the cost potentially and engage stakeholders that are often delivering public services in a different way. I mentioned the civil society role already. I mentioned issues forums that edemocracy.org does. And I mentioned the fact that you can go out and really begin embracing the whole Web 2.0 environment. And a lot of it is about getting government and decision-making information into that position that it basically enters the data stream. It enters this network of networks. And you have to let go a little bit and understand that people will misrepresent your information from time to time, but 95% of the time they won't. And it's that fact that you've gotten out to many more people that makes government actually and governance worth the attention of the public. And that's the competition. While a citizen can't choose, I'm going to be a citizen of Wisconsin and pay taxes in Wisconsin because they have a better website. You can't choose in government. But citizens are choosing every day about where they put their eyeballs, if they just go to the media sites, if they just go to the opinion sites, and they basically say, there's nothing for me on that government website, there's nothing for me on that civil society website, we're losing an access point to people. So I want to invite you, people have asked the question about where do I get the slides, where do I get different materials from this conference. Obviously, I'm sure there'll be certain materials on the Council of Europe website. But I run a website called Democracy's Online Newswire. I've been doing it since 98. It's about 2,500 people around the world. DoWire.org is a blog newsletter. But if you go to /Europe, there's a new online community of practice. I would be honored to have you interact with each other. But we're also doing this in the United States and some other places. And I want to actually have people in the U.S. learn from your dynamic e-participation activities. And by having you be part of this global network, you'll be able to promote the number of resources that you have on e-democracy. And it's not to compete with other projects that are funded. It's more of a simple email list as a way to complement and promote what's happening across Europe. Publicus.net is where you'll find lots of articles. And edemocracy.org is where, if you're interested in building local up issues forums. There's 47 countries here, so find me 47 cities, and we'll do a whole network of online local neighborhood forums someday. So thank you so much for the honor to present to you today.